telling their network what they want, being really specific with what you actually want, because people in your network are going to send you all kinds of stuff anyway. But the more clear you can be on what you want, the more likely you're going to be able to engage your network and actually get useful leads out of it. But leaning into your networking more than ever, because I think hiring teams on the other side are really relying on that because the alternatives are tough.
Welcome to the Leaders of B2B podcast, a weekly show where we bring you interviews and in-the-weeds expertise with today's B2B experts and thought leaders. You can see more about today's episode and guest by visiting our website at leadersofb2b.com.
Hey, leaders, welcome back. This is Ledge. Today, I'm talking to Erica Clicks. Erica is a job search specialist. I am going to hand it over to you, Erica, to give the proper introduction because I know I'm not going to absolutely nail this. But Erica, you and I connected on LinkedIn. You were talking about your craft and expertise. I thought it'd be great for the audience. So welcome. Please give a proper introduction.
Yes, I am Erica Clicks. I am a job search strategist for people in the tech industry. I primarily work with directors, VPs, startup heads, anybody who is looking to grow in their careers, everything from I'm curious, I'm interested in looking for a job to offer signed. So resume writing, interviews, all of the things along the way and all of the junk kind of that comes up along the way in the job search too. So
I thought this would be totally relevant to the audience because look, somebody out there is in between things. They want to jump on a new project, maybe they're rotting away in the cube or a former cube because they're actually rotting away in their house alone now on Zoom. You know, it's just like, hey, we need new adventures. And sometimes it's time for a new chapter. And I know if I were to go do that, I haven't prepared a resume or looked for a job in 15 years. Like I would be completely screwed. I have no idea how I would do that. So I would love to talk through what that's because it's 2024 and everything's different. And I don't know. I read stuff about my resume is going to be screened out by AI and whatever. God help us. So yeah, just lay it out a little bit. I will ask questions as if I am the audience and try to help to bring some structure on that narrative.
Yeah. It's funny what you said about not having looked for a job in 15 years, because that's what most of my clients right now are saying to me. They're coming and they're saying, I got my last three jobs or however many jobs that they've been in this market by opening my LinkedIn emails or opening my email and seeing what was up, who was reaching out to me, what seemed interesting, and then just going after it. And that's not been the case for most people right now. It still is for some random people out there, but very few in this market. Job searching in 2024 requires a lot more thought, strategy, outreach, output in order to really get the job search moving, because the market is really unsettled. I will say that there's pockets of opportunity, pockets of areas of growth, but it's so inconsistent across the market that it's really hard for anybody to really know what's happening. Unless you're in it and you're hiring, it's hard to tell what's what. So
unless you're like a $900,000 prompt engineer or something, but I don't know how that even happens.
I don't know anybody who does that. I know it exists, but I don't.
And they all make $1 million now. So that's good.
I've also seen that, in fact, there are studies that saying prompt engineering in its own is not actually any more impactful than just using the base model. So there's also that.
So basically, I just write AI on my LinkedIn headline and I just wait for the jobs.
No, I wish I would tell all my clients to do that. No.
Right. Yeah. I mean, walk through this. Okay. I come in and I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I exited my startup or I got laid off or what does this even look like now? Like I have no context. This is almost like why I'm interested. I want to just know what that looks like now. I literally have not produced a resume since God knows when, 2007
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. I will tell you what most people do and then I'll tell you what not to do. Because I think that's a good way to start.
Right.
Because I think what a lot of people do is once they're realizing, oh, I need to go look for a job. So gone through a layoff, which a lot of folks have, or just done. Because there's also a lot of companies right now where they're not growing, they're stuck, low resource, just feeling very limited in their job. So get to the point where you're saying, I want something new. What most people do is they go look at the job boards and they start looking at jobs that are out there and like pulling out an old resume, tacking the most recent stuff in a handful of bullets, and then just sending it out to the jobs that they might be interested in applying, maybe going to ask their friends, maybe kind of tossing things out to their network and saying, hey, I'm looking, what you got? Right now, those things are not really working because it's very hard to get a sense for how you are presenting yourself if you are just catering your resume or catering your experience based on what you know and what, on a job board. Because job descriptions right now, they're not very well written a lot of times. You'll see job descriptions where there's, I don't know, 20 or 30 bullets about what we want in this person, and that's not a real person. So there's a lot of stuff around just going to a job.
And they're all like, it's 25 things about all the stuff you need to do, and then it's must have 3 years of experience. It's like completely contradictory. It's like entry-level associate with 25 years of experience. It's like stuff is just bizarre. You're just like, that doesn't even make sense.
Or on the other side, like director of product marketing, and they want you to be writing all the content campaigns or, you know, whatever. Like it's.
Yes, I see that too. And like, that's nuts. That's a tactical execution role and has no leadership. It's just so weird. But I guess certainly startups do that. Just must wear many hats and whatever. Those types of things that are basically like, you're going to be all the things that I don't want to do when I grow up.
I can talk a little bit about how I think about startups and talking about how to actually tell startups what they need so that you could be the person they actually need. But that's, we can get there. But first we're going to write your resume, because what I really want, what I do with clients is focus on taking a step back in time and really reflecting on what they want and what they've done, what they've actually done. Because most people, when they've gone through a job and they've spent 2 years or however many years, sometimes a lot of years in some cases, you just go like next project, next priority, next whatever, next executive, whatever's next. And they're not really sitting back and reflecting. So they're only really seeing either what they're only really remembering what they've done most recently, or they're thinking about it through the lens that they're in their current company. So they're like, you're talking about your, I'm trying to think of a good example of this. As a director of technology, you're dealing with the problems that you're facing right now with your current team and the way that you're currently doing it in this current environment. But it doesn't mean that every engineering organization does it that way, thinks about it that way, has those problems. So how can you take a step back and think about, where do you actually want to work? Where have companies done this before? How do you think that they might be doing it in other places, so that you can start to articulate your experience from a new lens, a wider lens than the company that you're currently in?
And a personally fruitful lens. So I'm interested on how do you question and interview your, you know, clients to become more self-aware, right? Because people say like, I just want to work someplace that's like engaging and that I have upward mobility or something exciting. And it reminds me of the way that if you ever work with designers, people are like, I don't know, I don't like it, it just doesn't pop. We're like, that's not helpful. So like, how do you actually draw this out? It's very similar to a sales experience. Like, you're not going to tell me what I need to know. And if I ask you like, what's your pain point? It's not going to work. So I am fascinated by interviewing and like understanding real humans by good question asking. And I'm sure that's part of your work.
That's a lot of it. A lot of it is really reflecting back, because what a lot of people tell me when we first dive in, I do what's called an experience inventory. We're really taking an inventory of your experience. So the first part of that is a big brain dump. Get it all out there. I don't care. You could judge as much of it as you want along the way. We're going to pick it apart, because what happens is a lot of the stuff just gets stuck in there in general. And I'm trying to think of a good example. I had a client really recently who has done product and partnerships. And he's led all sorts of teams and partnerships and projects and integrations. And he thought of himself one way throughout his whole career. Oh, I do partnerships. But when we actually took a look back at the experience that he was doing, he was building the product through partnerships. He was the product leader. He had a VP of product title at some point in time, but he only ever saw himself as the partnerships person because that's how he had been labeled at some point in time. And that's how he had branded himself at some point in time. But when we actually went back, he's, oh no, I did all the customer research. I did all of the ICP work. I did all of the road mapping for this. Like, it was an integration, but it was a product. It was the core product. So really, kind of, we started thinking about that and shifting how he thought about himself. And once you do that, then the other ideas come up, because then he's saying, oh, here are all of the other examples of where I've done this exact same thing. And he started to tell a whole new story.
And this is a person who would have searched jobs with the word partnership instead of product or some type of leadership role related to what the experience actually was.
The searching for partnerships, and also his resume was partnerships, 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 partnerships. But in fact, once we're like, wait, no, let's put this new lens on it, because this is actually what you want to be doing. You like the building part. This is came out of this too. Is, yes, I want partners. I do partnerships, but I like these other parts instead. Okay, if you like these parts, let's talk more about these parts. There are roles out here for this that do this part of your job. If you don't want to do the other part, don't do the other part. He was getting caught up in, oh, I need all these partnerships roles. Talk about channel marketing. They all talk about all these things I don't want to do. So don't do it. Go over here instead. But then that really requires, okay, so now you want to go into a product role. You want to have this emphasis. Now we need to articulate that experience. We actually need to really flesh that out and get really specific on how you are a product person. So a resume that he could have been using as a partnerships person last year as a product leader looks totally different, even though the experience is exactly the same. So I think that's where a lot of this process is about unpacking somebody's experience and what they actually want so that they can really start to dial in on it.
And it's a lot about then the details and story underneath each. It's still the same job. You worked there. It was called this. You had these dates, but that's all that stays.
Exactly.
It's the story of what happened.
Exactly. Because then you focus on, if you're going partnerships versus product, you focus on the relationship with the engineering team. You focus on the roadmap. You focus on long-term product goals. Whereas on the other side, you'd be focusing on relationship building. You'd be focused on contracts. You'd be focusing on all the different things. They're both the same role, totally different in terms of what you're sharing. This tends to be true. This is a pretty, extreme version of one person, two roles. Most of the time when I work with leaders, it's not maybe as cut and dry as I'm going into and it'll be a different title. Most of the time it's same title, but a little bit more of a focus on, I want to work at a company where they're at this particular stage of growth, where we're working on these types of problems. So you need to be able to articulate how you address those problems, how you solve those problems. So it really depends on the client, but it's always about taking a look at what have you actually done? What do you want to do? And then, of course, does that job actually exist in the market? Because that's important.
Yeah. And I know there's a overwhelming sort of focus on soft skills and all these things, which isn't new, because I remember that when I was looking for a job, people act like it's new. And I'm curious, do you use any kind of assessments or anything to try to core strengths or any of these types of deals to help people get out of their own head?
I might be one of the only people, I think, that doesn't. Here's what I'll say. Your soft skills come through the interview process. When you're actually talking about how you do something, about how you've executed, about the specifics of your role, I'm so much more interested in taking a look at the real tangibles. The soft skills, your collaboration, your ability to communicate ideas, your empathy.
Collaboration
is the biggest one, right? But because
coaching underlings or something like that.
Yeah. All of those things really come through when you're talking about how you do something in an interview. And we talk about that stuff a whole lot because it's important to every startup.
Sure. But you got to get the interview first.
Exactly.
Right.
I also think all startups are cross-functional. Every role in a startup is cross-functional. And so rather than try to look for roles that are cross-functional, challenges, I think, in terms of certain cultures within companies where maybe they're not as cross-functional as they should be. But
And it goes the other way too. Yeah. Where it's just every job is all the jobs. Right. And there are no lines between anything.
But that stuff you suss out in the interview process. You're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you to make sure that's really the case.
And that's a great point. I bet people don't do that.
I think people get, especially in this market, because it's pretty hard to get into the interview process and to get into the conversation, that people all of a sudden they clam up and they think that they need to act a certain way, or they think that they only need to ask certain questions because you know, it's an opportunity for them. But what I think they forget is the fact that, like, when you're hiring leaders, you need leaders to challenge what's happening. You need leaders to ask hard questions. You need a leader. You need to show up and be the leader that you're going to be in the role. And the interview process, the interview structure is not really conducive to doing that. But the great interviewers that the clients that really do well in these interview processes, they take that ownership of their own leadership in the search. And that's something that I talk a lot about with my clients, is like, how do you hold on to that even when it is stressful? No one's going to not deny these interview processes are really stressful, but you can't forget that, like, oh, right, no, when at the end of this process, I'm going to step into this role and I'm going to be the person leading this team. So how do I want to present as the person who's going to be leading this team when this process is over?
Right. Is there, as a sort of big ticket sales type, I'm curious how those types of skills seem like they would be important, come to the table with solutions, and that kind of vibe is just come out swinging, but not in a way that somebody's like, you're a jerk or whatever.
Well, I think I have a lesson in my course. It's called Take a Bold Stance. It's the idea of, you come in, they're interviewing you as the expert. They want your opinion. They want to know what you think. They want to know how you would approach these problems, because they're in them right now and they don't know how to solve them. If they knew how to solve them, they would not be hiring you. They would
have. That's like consultative selling, right? Yeah, exactly. It's just look, they want this to be over too. Be the expert, solve this problem for them. Everybody hates this process. They don't want to talk to you. They want to solve the problem.
And I think people who do this really well, they make the connection. So in fact, they do want to talk to you. They do get excited about actually getting in the room to talk to you, because—
Wow. Okay. That's not me.
Yeah. When I've been in recruiting, on the recruiting side, I started in 2010, and my hiring managers, when we had candidates who were just it, they were very excited about hopping into interviews. And I know that to still be the case. It's like, when we find a candidate who really, like, they think can be the person, there's energy behind that process. So my goal with clients is to make sure that they are the person and that companies want to hire in that room. But because I think that feeling is harder to capture now than it ever has been before, because the interview process feels really daunting, but it does still exist. I had a client just last week who did two interviews, and she got an offer within 2 weeks because they were just so excited about the energy that she brought in, the fact that it was so clear that she was the obvious fit for the role. And I don't think people think that's possible right now, but it is. It really is possible to find the good fit.
And how, as the guide, how you have access to the same badly written job rec that, you know, so how do you know what they really want versus what they wrote?
I don't. Obviously, I'm not. I wish I was a fortune teller. That would be cool, but I'm not. Just see what's happening. But I think there's signals. I think of them as levers of fit, right? So there's the product itself. Companies really, when they're unsure of the market and they're unsure of where the market is going, right? There's a lot of changes happening, election year, AI, all of the funding changes, all the different things are happening. There's a lot of uncertainty. Companies look for the sure thing. It means there are a lot, even startups that talk about being very open to risk and trying new things. When it comes to hiring, they're super risk averse. When you think about, okay, so how can I be the least risky option? It tends to be product expertise, customer expertise, experience at this exact size and stage, experience, like when you're talking about solving the problems, okay, most startups deal with the same challenges when they're growing from 50 to 75 people. So what challenges are they? What did I deal with at that particular size and stage of company? How can I articulate that? And then how can I make sure the things that they do spell out directly in the job description are just like straight up glaring at them on a resume or in an outreach message or through a referrals note. So those tend to be the major levers and the easiest ones for startups to be like, great, this is the least risky option for us. We'd be really excited to talk this person into the exact same thing that we're looking for 2 years ago.
It's remarkably similar to sales process. Yes.
Yeah.
In that way. Yeah. Do candidates understand that? I would imagine it's probably easier to work with somebody who comes out of a experienced sales background, because we're just like, oh yeah, I get it. Cool. I'm the product.
Yeah. It's funny because I think salespeople have different challenges. A lot of times with, it's hard to turn the mirror back on yourself. So I actually wrote an article on the Product Marketing Alliance around how to be the product. I forget what it's called somewhere. I wrote it a couple years ago, but it was literally like, think about yourself as the product. Who is your ideal customer? What do they need? Can you address their needs? Great. Put that on your resume. Fantastic.
Sure. Yeah. It's like your one sheet or whatever it is. Yeah. Okay. And you hear things all the time now about, I don't know, like I couldn't get a job. So I made this like TikTok video and I went viral with my TikTok resume. And is that just stuff that happens to hit the media? I imagine there are not millions of people doing that successfully.
No, I think every once in a while you get stuff that stands out and then it gets picked up. But for the most part, right, people aren't doing that. And I've been talking about this recently with some folks. I also think there's a big push right now to be a content creator on LinkedIn. Oh, if you publish a lot, if you post a lot, this is how you're going to get discovered. Somebody's going to see you. They're going to see your content. They're going to want to hire you. I don't know.
Yep. 2 years later.
I just don't know. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it is a long game. That's for sure.
It's a long tail. Yeah.
It's a long tail game for sure. But also, it's just not necessarily how hiring works. Hiring works with, this has been always been the case as a recruiter, as we've always been trying to build the talent pool. Let's build the bench of people who we could potentially reach out to, except that when you do that and you invest in that, when the role opens, that has nothing to do with the thing that we've been trying to build pipeline for, because we didn't see where we were going to be in 2 years. We have to start all over anyway. So it's just never been how recruiting has worked or how hiring has worked. And it could potentially, in the long term, maybe work, but it is not a now here and now solution to go be a content creator and or to,
right. It's like demand gen for later. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. And of course everybody gets the job and then stops making content, which is if you're using that strategy, that'd be the worst thing to do. But interesting. Okay. So the real deal is like if you're a recruiter at a company, are you actually searching LinkedIn for fitting people? Because you got like, there's the job thing out there that maybe I can click apply. So there's the inbound, right? And then I imagine there's some type of headhunting in certain high level roles. Is that all happening behind the curtain there? I have to admit, I'm now thinking about this, I have no idea how I would actually go find a candidate. I don't know what I would do if I needed to hire the right one of these people. Would I go try to find them or hit my network? Or on the hiring side, it's got to be
difficult. I think it is really hard right now, especially for the recruiters that I've talked to and the founders, with really early stage teams. They don't have a recruiter yet, and a lot of companies have really pulled back on utilizing agencies and paying agency fees because they see so many candidates on the market. They're like, our candidate must be out there. So they post a job and then they get 1,000 applications and then they close it and they don't look at it because that's way too stressful.
It's overwhelming. Yeah.
So a lot of the roles, particularly the directors and the VPs and like those leadership level roles for startups, a lot of what I'm seeing is networking based hiring right now, which has always been the case for really early stage startups. But then as they grow, usually it tends to be a little bit more of a healthy mix. In recruiting a couple of years ago, a healthy mix would be like a third inbound, recruiter, outbound, and referrals. Now, at least with the clients that I work with, we're at about 50-50 of getting jobs through referrals versus applications. So leaders are still getting roles through cold applications. I do with clients, we do like an outreach strategy. Yes, cold apply, but then actually go find the CEO, find the potential hiring team, whoever it is. If you are a good fit, I don't recommend you apply if you're not a good fit, but that's also comes back to like really tight targeting. But more and more of my clients are seeing that they're getting more traction in their job search and in interviews and ultimately getting to offer when they're coming through referrals. And not just like somebody sent me the referral link and I applied, but like genuine people vouching for them, vouching for their experience. Because it goes back to this idea of reducing risk. And one of the best ways to reduce risk is social proof. So I really recommend folks taking a deep look at their network, telling their network what they want, being really specific with what you actually want, because people in your network are going to send you all kinds of stuff anyway. But the more clear you can be on what you want, the more likely you're going to be able to engage your network and actually get useful leads out of it. But leaning into your networking more than ever, because I think hiring teams on the other side are really relying on that, because the alternatives are tough. Recruiters, don't get me wrong, there are recruiters who work at companies who absolutely go still look and do outbound sourcing and are hiring for key roles, particularly those leadership level roles, because they have really specific skill sets that they're looking for. And so yes, somebody needs to go do that and manage a pipeline and bring real candidates into the pipeline. And that's usually the job of the recruiter.
And that whole networking thing has been billed forever, as far as I can remember, as most of the jobs never get posted at all. You have to network. And then I think then it mixes into the somehow networking became, yeah, I just post crap on LinkedIn and I'm networking. But also there's not as many go to happy hour to network with other leaders. That doesn't happen as much as it used to, except for like low-level jobs there. What is networking? Is this an actual personal outreach campaign?
I always think about it in terms of a few different strategies. You have the people who are already in your network, the people who you've worked with, the people who you've met with, the people who you've collaborated with along the way. And I think people's networks tend to be larger than they think they are. So when people think about their networks, they think about, okay, my immediate team or the three people that I work with most often. But there are more people than that you've worked with. There's people who you've had one random project and you happen to work together on this thing. You have people who probably in your network speak well of you or appreciate your work where you never would have known if you hadn't just reached out and been like, hey, I was just thinking about you. How's it going? Really simple. Oh, I was reflecting. I was talking in an interview about this project that I did, and it actually reminded me that of this work, just thinking about you.
Oh, are you interviewing right now? Yeah, that's
very clever. Signal. Yeah. But there's
neuro-linguistic programming. Yeah, well done. Well done.
But there's different ways of connecting with people who you know. So I always think about the circles of folks. So there's like people you've worked with most closely, people you've collaborated with, people who you enjoyed working with, even if you didn't necessarily work with them super closely. There's people that I used to work with that I really admire and just appreciated, and like they're in your network, whether or not you like actively are talking to them or not. And then people you've met along the way, people you've met at conferences, people you've met, and then really start widening the circle out. So those are the people that are already in your network. Then I think about jobs that you're interested in and then figuring out, okay, so who do I know who knows somebody here? Who, like, because there are always going to be people in your network who are the connectors, and they're the people who like tend to know everybody.
That's the badge of the chef on LinkedIn. I'm the connector. Not that I'm open to work. I wish it had that. I'm the super.
You can make
connector.
Your own badge. There's a little stick it on your.
Stick it on my thing. Yeah. Everybody likes to call me. It's funny, like having ever been a person that did heavy networking, people still reach out years later. And I'm like, y'all, I don't talk to anybody now. Like, I just do my job. Like, I'm the worst person to talk to. But yeah, I get that. All right, cool. That's a whole like constellation of stuff there. How, from a sole practitioner standpoint, as a business owner, then how do you split your time? Because there's also that whole deal, like you're individual consultant, essentially, yeah. Right? Like you need deal flow. How does that all work?
So I operate very differently, I think, than I don't talk a lot about how I run my business on like my LinkedIn content, because I find that it is hard to relate to, but I do post on LinkedIn. I post on LinkedIn. I think about half of my clients come through LinkedIn and the other half come through referrals. And a lot of the referrals are either people I've worked with. I'm always flattered. If anybody's listening to this, feel free, reach out. I'm always flattered when people say, oh, I interviewed with you for whatever role at Snapchat or wherever back in the day. And now I follow you on LinkedIn because we've been connected, because I used to connect with literally everybody as a recruiter. And I really appreciate what you say, or I love the angle you're taking. How can we work together? So that's really how my own business has grown. And I just try to remain open to all of the folks that I've talked to over the years. So when I can connect people, I do. When I can see an opportunity, if I'm thinking about somebody and I'm like they're perfect for this, even if I have no idea what they're doing right now or if they're job searching anymore or whatever, just to really add to my network. Because I think that's a really important part is you can't just ask for things. And this is like networking 101. You can't just ask for things when you need them.
Add value first so that there's reciprocity involved later. And then that can be a very genuine thing. It's not just an influence thing.
Yeah, it's not just, for me personally, I do this because I love this. I love talking to people about what they're passionate about. I love the idea of helping people grow in their careers. You spend so much time doing this. Why not like really do? I love the idea of helping people improve. Yep,
exactly. It would be hard to fake it if you didn't like it.
Well, I know a lot of recruiters who...
I also know a lot of recruiters.
They just get the fat check at the end of the day. And they're like, I just, you know.
Yeah, it's, I think genuine authenticity is always going to, for the long term, is going to sell better, right? It's like, all right, if I, whatever Erica's fee is to do this thing, I know it's going to be done well and she cares about the outcome. And I think as anybody that provides any service, you probably 90% of the time are just like, it's not the right fit. Oh, but I know a person. And I think that disposition is right. Most of the leads that I talk to in any business that I run are just essentially that same thing. It's just this, I strongly recommend you not do the thing that you're saying, which means I will make no money from you, but I would rather protect you for the future.
So. I tell plenty of people all the time, I'm not the right fit for them in their job search. And I'm okay with that because I'd rather be working with folks where I know that I can help them go wherever they're going to go next. And I've definitely told people who were thinking about the search, now is not the time if you're employed. And it depends. It's everybody's circumstances different. Everybody's, if it's time for you, then it's time for you. But there are absolutely people that I will happily say, no, I will not take your money because it's not the right time for you right now. Or let's think about this a little bit more before you really take the plunge.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And you talked about having courses and things like that. Then is that a core piece of the business?
It is now. I've been really starting. I've been doing primarily like one-to-one, hop on Zoom and let's talk through your stuff. But we're getting a lot more structured. I have two programs today. One is Inevitable Offers. And we actually, there's the foundation is a course, but there's still one-to-one because so much of the work is in having the sounding board of somebody just to ask the good questions, like we were talking about. And then the other one is a private client experience, also one-to-one, just a lot more hands-on. We do sourcing for folks. We just do a lot more of the consultation part of things so that the jobs are just move a little bit more quickly for folks who don't have as much time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense too. And then a course methodology is probably a very good way to So like, am I even ready to work with someone like you, right? Like, how do I set the groundwork in order to be prepared for this search? Because that's hard. What do I do at the beginning, basically?
Yeah, I think a lot of the work that I do is around helping people shift how they think about the job search. Because so much of what the industry, LinkedIn, the people say is like, how do you put yourself into the box so that they are the perfect fit for the job? And a lot of what I do is be like, wait a minute, hold up. This is your opportunity in your job search. Every job search is your chance to guide the direction of your career in some direction. So what is it that you want and start positioning you from that lens? So the mindset shift around, you don't have to put yourself in their box. The mindset shift around, you are really positioning yourself as opposed to just putting yourself out there, and then the relationship building piece along the way. That's really what the foundational stuff is that I work on with folks. That's what the course material is. And then we come together on, okay, but the details of your job, your search, the things that you've done, how can we articulate that experience for the job that you want? So it's a lot about like really dialing in.
Sure. And then I guess I'm curious about what would you say to everybody listening probably ought to have some disposition about, look, sometime in the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to be that. What should you be doing now? It's like an ongoing, that's just how it works now. You're going to either gonna get laid off or you're going to get bored or you're going to look for something new. What should you be doing all the time to, you know, then be ready, right? Like, just, I'm good to go. Like, next Monday, I want to get a job.
Yeah. So. I think step one, if you're in the job today, if it's not so urgent where you need the resume tomorrow, is to really think about, okay, so where do you want to be long term? There's two ways that people tend to think about their careers. They either have a North Star, they have a destination, like, I want to be a CMO, or I want to be a whatever. And then they also have, or they have the, I want the experiences. I want the, like, the excursions along the way. And there's not a wrong answer. It's just a matter of how you want to drive your career. So as you're thinking about those things, both types of people still have usually gaps along the way that they need to fill to get where they want to go. Because even the excursion person usually ultimately wants to grow. Might not be in terms of title, but maybe they want to grow in terms of type of company, or in terms of how much they, what their scope is or whatever. So it's reflecting on, okay, what are the gaps? So what role do I need to go to? If I'm going to go do another job, I got a checklist of gaps. How many, like, what should I check off the list next? So I'd think about that. And then the other thing I would think about is just really recording all the stuff that you've done. So you don't have to go and torture yourself trying to figure it out. In my program, you can go and just have these things. You can have your performance reviews if your company has any sort of structured performance review. One of my favorite things to look at is your calendar. Who have I been meeting with? What project took up most of my time in the last couple of months? That can really help you focus on, okay, where have I really been spending my time? What have I been doing? And that's like keeping a record of that along the way, so that when it's time to pull out the resume template and pop the stuff in, you have it there for you.
I had one colleague ever who was brilliant at this. And I always looked at it and said, I should really do that too. Kept a personal wiki of all the work experiences every single day, like a journal. And it was invaluable. And of course, I never did it, but I looked at it and said, that's what I should do.
It's a skill all on its own to be the record keeper. Right. Yeah. It's not me. Yeah. No, but I also know, I'm like, okay, I do know where all my stuff is. At least I can look at my calendar, because I live by my calendar, and I could take a look and be like, oh, that's when we did that employer branding project. Oh my goodness. I totally forgot about all of this 10 things that were associated with the employer branding project, right? It like starts to open up the ideas for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think my experience has been that those stories come out from the stuff that you took for granted, like that, in fact, you took it for granted because it was easy for you. That doesn't mean that everybody else wouldn't look at that and think that's amazing.
That is very true. That tends to happen with pretty much every experience inventory. Somebody will be like, oh yeah, but we just like also did the documentation of the whatever. And I'd be like, wait,
hold on, what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. So from the recruiter side, the interviewer side, obviously, like you went to the other side of the table. Did anything surprise you when doing that? Or was it just, oh yeah, I've seen this before and now I can sit in that seat?
Yeah, you mean like when I shifted from being a recruiter to helping these? I think the biggest thing that surprised me, because it's being able to turn the mirror back on yourself. I just assumed that people would know what recruiters were looking for. I assume that if they didn't talk about it, it's because they didn't have it, or we didn't hear it. So I never really thought about it after that, because we just moved away on with that candidate. But now working with job seekers, they'll get off an interview and they'll be like, oh, they asked me about this. I didn't really have a good story for it. And then if we dig and unpack something, in fact, they have a fantastic story for it. They just didn't think about it. And I just never, as a recruiter, really thought, I just like, we only have so much time to talk to people. So now I really try to get ahead of that for job seekers and pick out the stories, because
I have a great insight. Yeah. I remember I never liked hiring people, but had to do it. And just get to a certain point, you have to do those things. And I remember the number one thing that drove me crazy was I would like a candidate. I'm going to pass him or her up the chain and they would bomb. And I'd say, what was going on there? And what I came to find was that people thought I already told that story, which was my good one. So I had to come up with a second example. And I was like, but that person never talked to you yet. Stick to the script. It's almost like media training. You have two or three things that are the exact right thing and it got you to the next step, don't change it after that because you think you're being repetitive. That's a different human. And you impressed human one with that story. Tell it again. I don't know if you saw that happen, but that was the thing that would always be like, that's crazy. Stop doing that.
There's something that, because this does happen because larger companies do pretty detailed scorecards where they'll talk about the stories that they told. And so I've had this happen with a client at Amazon where she told a story and then at a later interview, she told the same story and the interviewer were like, yeah, but we heard that one already. So can you tell us something else? This does not usually happen, by the way. This was like a very rare instance, but.
Right. I bet startups don't do that. I could see that in Amazon.
No, and Amazon doesn't. Like, or maybe some like very structured interview processes. But there is something that I do with clients called experience lenses, where we take one. So I mentioned the idea of employer branding. This is a project that I owned back when I worked at Zapier. We did a big employer branding thing. But there's like lots of different pieces. There was like pitching this to the CMO. There was doing the customer research. There was doing the cross-functional, like leading the team to do it. How did we structure it? The actual result, it's all of the different pieces. There's 10 stories in there that I could tell about employer branding. And so I could tell the same story from a bunch of different lenses and not feel repetitive, not feel like I was repetitive, but also then hitting on the different things that you might need to hit on in different parts of the process. Yeah, because some of the you're like talking to your cross-functional partners in later interviews or in a panel presentation versus the hiring manager wants to get really into the nitty-gritty. There's different expectations at different parts of the process. So
and you could say, I may have believe in a previous interview, I mentioned this story. I'm going to take that from a different perspective. And then you can relate back, which makes sense because you can anchor into the thing that you know. I think of that as that's again similar to sales, because like when I run a revenue function, I have this metaphor in my head of it's like the carousel at the park, and there's lots of horses on there, but that middle thing with all the lights and the flashy colors and stuff on it, the cylinder in the middle is the same, but people choose a different horse to ride.
Yeah.
And I think that's always helped me to be like, which horse did this person choose? We all know it's the same thing, but their experience was different because they went around and up and down in a totally different animal. It's fantastic. Thank you for these insights. I hope that it's useful to the audience. I'll let you wrap up. I'd be glad to make sure that people can reach you. And if they have this type of need or experience in this process, it is a time that people are getting laid off and there's uncertainty and turmoil, and want to be as helpful as we can. So please fire away on that.
Yeah. You can find me. I'm the only Erica Clicks, as far as I know anyway, on LinkedIn. If you look for me there, or ericaclicks.com. And that's got information about the methodology that I use, the programs, all the stuff. But also just if you're on LinkedIn, send me a connection invite. I'm an open networker. I'm happy to meet and to chat with people and to just answer questions and hear what people are thinking about what's going on in their own searches.
Fantastic. Erica, thank you so much for the insights. It was really good having you on.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Leaders of B2B podcast. And as always, you can see more information about this episode and all the resources mentioned at leadersofb2b.com. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star rating. This episode is brought to you by Content Allies. We help B2B companies launch revenue-generating podcasts. We schedule interviews between you and your ideal prospects and strategic partners. You show up for engaging conversations, we handle everything else. Ready to build a podcast that grows your business in just 1 hour per week? Reach out to us at contentallies.com.